Call Art Bell toll-free west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is indeed. I just got a fact that sums up what you're about to hear. Art, tonight's subject matter is of the same magnitude of impact as a nuclear bomb can have in its potential to upset your day. That's in quotes. Einstein once said, there are two things that are infinite. One is the universe, and the other is the stupidity of the human race. How many wake-up calls do we need? That's from Daryl in Los Angeles, and it's right on the money. My guest is Rodney Barker. His book is And the Waters Turned to Blood. And what you're about to hear is going to scare the hell out of you, and it should. I've got quite a bit of material which I'm going to use as setup for this, but I need once again to take a moment out and tell you this is the release date, or was 7 minutes ago, for my book that so many of you have been waiting for so long, called The Quickening. And believe you me, that's what we're talking about this morning. Quickening. If you doubt that, stick around for a few depressing minutes. Anyway, this book poured forth from me. I knew it was the right book for the right time. It absolutely is. It chronicles in every, and I mean chronicles as in documents, in every area of human endeavor, politically, socially, economically, our weather, our earth changes, an exponential quickening that's going on in our society. And when I say document, I mean document. This is a 336-page hardcover book available as of now. As of now. Now, I've got to put a couple of caveats in here because they're totally swamped and you're not going to be able to get through. The price of the book, by the way, is $24.95 plus $5 shipping and handling, just like my first book, The Art of Talk. And the waters turned to blood. I've got an article from Wilmington, Delaware, entitled Sores on Fish Baffle State Officials. I just got a story from Steve in Portland. You may have seen it earlier on CNN. Crawling in mass from the sea, they are piling up on shore, providing a bonanza for beachcombers, but a serious concern for fishermen. A, quote, red tide, end quote, of crayfish has accumulated on the shore 150 miles north of Cape Town, South Africa. And residents have arrived from far away to see the odd spectacle and carry away as much seafood as they can. The crayfish have been coming out of the water for the last 4 weeks. They're trying to escape a red tide caused by a type of phytoplankton, I can't pronounce that, that depletes oxygen levels in the sea. An estimated, get this, 1,000 tons of crayfish have walked out of the ocean so far, and marine experts are very worried, as are local fishermen, whose livelihood has suffered due to the crayfish exodus. In other words, they are committing suicide. They're just walking out of the sea, period. Now, whether or not that is related to what my guest is talking about in North Carolina remains to be seen. Rodney, we are joined at this hour by Los Angeles and San Francisco. So we're going to have to retrench a little bit. Are you there, Rodney?
I am, Art.
All right. Your book, again, is not fiction. Everybody needs to understand this is well documented. What you're about to hear is truth, not fiction. Agreed with that? Do you agree with that, Rodney?
Oh, absolutely.
I want to be very careful.
Absolutely.
All right. You have discovered, or that's not right. Yeah. You have written a story about a botanist who has discovered a new organism in North Carolina. Now, you just heard what I read about in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound the same?
Oh, it sounds very similar. In fact, before they discovered what this organism was that was causing marine animals to behave so strangely, they were having what they called crab walks in North Carolina waters, where crabs were climbing out of the water, trying to climb pilings and posts and going on shore to get out of the water like there was something harmful in there, and they just didn't know what it was.
And now we do know what it is.
And it sounds uncannily similar.
All right. This, again, it's called Fisteria piscicida.
Piscicida, yeah. It's a microorganism that has lived in the sediment of the coastal waters of North Carolina, but it's been found all up and down the eastern seaboard and around over into the Gulf of Mexico. It attacks fish with a powerful toxin that bores holes in them. It paralyzes them. It feeds on them. And it also is releasing toxins that appear to be having profound human health effects.
Human health effects, like, get this, folks, it feeds on human blood. Am I correct?
Yeah.
It produces open sores. We're talking about conditions in human beings now, not just fish.
Mm-hmm.
It is airborne. Is that correct?
Yes.
It affects cognitive brain ability, apparently, much as Alzheimer's does. It affects the immune system, suppresses the immune system in human beings. Is that an exaggeration?
No, it's not. In fact, when what they call it is, when they see what it does to fish, is fish AIDS, because it so suppresses their immune system, it makes them vulnerable to a whole range of opportunistic diseases. And there are those who have even wondered if people chronically exposed to it in the waters themselves are not suffering with a suppression of the immune system that makes them not dissimilar from HIV patients.
So in other words, you're saying that even swimming in those waters that are infested, as you talk about, in North
mm-hmm.
Carolina and maybe elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
If you had an open sore, it could get into your bloodstream
mm-hmm.
and produce all of those symptoms.
Yeah.
The botanist who did the work on this herself got sick, and somebody else, you said, got sick.
Oh, in the laboratory, they have had the problem. 10 different researchers in 6 different labs have suffered from a range of symptoms similar to what we're talking about.
We're killing ourselves. We're out of our minds.
Yeah.
All right. How many of the waterways in North Carolina would you estimate are affected?
Well, what we're talking about is primarily the Pamlico Sound, which is the large sound, the Albemarle and the Pamlico Sound, which are held in by the Outer Banks. And you have 3 main rivers that feed them, the Pamlico, the Neuse, and the New River. It's also been found in the Cape Fear River. I mean, all those waters along that area seem to be the epicenter of the problem right now.
All right. From Greg in Seattle, Art, talk about a crisis of biblical proportions. This is the same organism that causes red tide poisoning in shellfish, is it?
It is similar to the organism that causes red tide. The difference is the red tide dinoflagellate is what they call it, a plant. And this is similar, but it is an animal. It has the nutritional needs of an animal. So it is similar, but it is also different.
All right, it goes on. Would you ask your guest to clarify mm-hmm. under what conditions this organism might adapt totally, for example, to fresh water, and what the potential is for massive bloom or blooming that might mm-hmm. eventually affect drinking water?
Yeah, all good questions. It has exhibited a tolerance for absolute fresh water to absolute seawater, but it clearly prefers brackish water, which is a mix of fresh and seawater.
It can live in fresh water?
Yeah, it can live in it, but it seems to like the best a mixture of the salt and the fresh.
All right, now, the theory, ladies and gentlemen, is that this horrible thing has been waiting like a time bomb for millions of years in the water at the bottom. Is that
correct? Yeah, in sediment.
In sediment, and that all of the pollution that we've been putting into our waters particularly in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
Has caused this thing to suddenly come alive.
Right.
Is that a...
No, yeah. Altered environmental conditions have allowed it to emerge in numbers and with a ferocity that was unknown before.
All right. I want to take a couple of calls as this story unwinds, and I realize a lot of you are new to it by about 5 or 10 minutes, but I want to take a couple of calls from near the area. So east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi.
Good morning. This is Marty from Virginia Beach, Virginia. I have the Albemarle Sound to my back door and have been adjacent to it for over 39 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
The old timers can tell you some of the same things that have happened with fish kills years ago in regards to if we don't have a lot of rain to push a lot of sediments out and cycle the earth like it's supposed to be. I believe if you do some core samples, you'll find out that this parasite has been around for quite some time. It's just because of certain environmental aspects of runoff and things are probably expiring it to dominate more and come out, flourish it.
Caller, may I ask a question of you? How aware of this story were you there near North Carolina before tonight?
This has been something that comes up when we have a lot of hot weather, drought conditions. You'll get fish killed then. But when we have a lot of rain, a lot of runoff, the parasite's not a problem. It's a twofold problem. You've got environment. You've got people who are lobbyists that will poo-poo this if it comes up and say it's no big deal. But you also have environmentalists who make it sound like it's the end of the world type of a animal, and you know this is going to happen to us if we don't treat it. And that's the sad thing about it. It's an organism that's been in the Albemarle Sound. I'm sure if you do core samples and do better studies on it, and make it sound like it's the wrath of God. It's just becoming a little bit more prevalent because of environmental reasons, dredging, runoff, you know, things that are making it may grow a little faster, drought conditions, when Albemarle Sound doesn't have a lot of rain.
All right.
The water is more...
all right, well, I think we've got the picture. Rodney, how do you answer that? That sounds like somebody you would debate with or may have been debating with.
No, I think he's making a point. I think the perception for a lot of people down there is, well, we've got this situation here, but, you know, it isn't as bad as some people are making it out to be, and yet it's worse than some others are making it out to be. And what I did in this book that had not been done was to go out and to comprehensively bring the information that was available both from the scientific community and from the academic community, and then down to collecting stories from people mainly in the Pamlico Sound and the rivers that feed that, to get the from them. And I'm getting a much more complete picture.
All right, but
I also talked to the doctors in the area and doctors doing scientific studies, and all of that adds up to a much more informed and an alarming picture.
All right. You said there was a letter sent to Vice President Gore by 110 doctors in North Carolina, which essentially said what?
Well, I'm looking at it right now.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. Physicians are usually notoriously uninvolved in political or environmental issues. An environmental issue is now, however, threatening the people of our community in New Bern, North Carolina. As doctors, we feel the need to speak out as advocates of our patients to protect them from possible health risk, which in this case involves exposure to our coastal rivers. The pollution in our rivers has caused an overgrowth of several organisms, one known as Pisteria, which has been implicated not only in fish kills, but in mammalian neurological dysfunction. And it goes on to call upon Dr. Al Gore to get involved and show a concern about this problem.
And that's 100 physicians
110
in North Carolina.
Physicians 110. Signed this from three coastal counties.
Oh, my God. All right. Would you go swimming in those waters?
No.
Would you drink any of that water?
No.
Well, of course, it's salt water you would drink.
No, anyway. But, you know, they're talking about, because of the population expansion of a thing called the Global Transpark there, of using waters from the Neuse that is heavily polluted and treating it and coming and turning into drinking water.
How does it get, how do we know it's airborne?
Well, they could, because of two things. One, in the laboratory, you had workers who were exposed to its toxins that came down with the same symptoms of people who come into contact with it. People out on the estuaries who've been exposed to these blooms have succumbed to the same series of symptoms. And in the laboratory test with rats, they're finding that they exhibit the same symptoms.
And a lot of people are calling this fish AIDS.
Fish AIDS. Because they have found that, you know, it's hard to get human subjects to experiment upon. So, you know, we're at that stage where we're getting an awful lot of circumstantial reports from a variety of people. We have the experience of researchers who didn't take proper precautions in the lab, but we're having to rely on other species. And that is fish, and that is the rats.
All right. What was determined? I remember when you were talking to Linda Moulton Howe, mm-hmm. she asked you something about they did an experiment with this animal and human blood. They put human blood, I guess, in a petri dish or something like that. And if you'll hold on after the bottom of the hour, we'll tell everybody what happened. And so if you think this is not a serious problem, I suggest you stick around for a moment. The book is And the Waters Turned Blood. We will tell you how to get that. It's absolutely an incredible story, and everybody should know about it. Now, he's been on ABC's Good Morning America, and I believe CNN. But, you know, until Brokaw says it, as you all know, it just isn't true. Sit back, listen, and decide for yourself. This is CBC.
Art Bell is taking calls on the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
I'm afraid what we are discussing this morning is worse than science fiction. I wish it was science fiction. It's not. It's what's happening in our oceans, and while the people in the Carolinas apparently know about it, I'm afraid you may be finding out about it for the first time. There's something new, alive, part plant, part animal, or in this case, animal, killing fish, in effect, giving fish what's being called fish AIDS, sores that will not heal. Many other symptoms, if in a human being, and it's airborne, will cause cognitive difficulties, will cause immune system suppression, and it is airborne, and in a moment we're going to tell you what it does to human blood. My guest is Rodney Barker, and he wrote, And the Waters Turned to Blood. And Art wishes this was science fiction. It is not. By the way, on my website right now, a link to the Charleston Post and Courier, which has an article entitled Scientists Track the Phantom. The Phantom you're about to hear about. All right, well, this may have nothing to do with anything, but Art, ABC News at the top of the hour, just ran a story that girls are developing sexually at an extremely young age in North Carolina. Reports said doctors believe it is because of elevated levels of estrogen in diet. 50% of black and 15% of white girls are affected in North Carolina. Does that strike you as odd, Rodney?
Yeah, both yes and no. You know, I think this is a theme in your book, Art, that I mean, the world is going through some revolutionary changes now because of what we've done to it. And, you know, we've all known that, you know, if we continue to put pressures on the environment around us, population and pollution pressures, that sooner or later limits will be reached and it'll come back to haunt us.
I think it's pushing back.
Yeah, and the question is, you know, what does it look like? Will we recognize it, and how will we respond? And I think some of the things that your listeners are sending in tonight, some of the things that both you are concerned about and I am, are examples of the Earth striking back.
All right. Look, they took some of this animal, you're calling it.
Yeah.
And did what with a petri dish with
well,
human
what,
blood?
What happened was, and the news gets worse in terms of they still do not know the full range of the human health effects here because the toxins of this organism have not been characterized yet. And typically marine toxins are released in suites. That's S-U-I-T-E-S. The brevetoxin that causes red tide, there are six different toxins there. They think there are at least this many here, and that means six different ways, at least, it can get you. Six different manifestations. I mean, some may target the liver, some the lungs, some the heart, some the central nervous system. So they still don't have all the answers in here. But what you're asking me about is something that they do know. And that is when the assistant to this Dr. Joanne Burkholder at North Carolina State, who discovered this organism, when he finally recovered his mental abilities, this is after 3 or 4 months of being out of the lab because he had inhaled its toxins, he came back into the lab one night, and he wanted to see if it affected human blood. And I go into this in the book, the dramatic incident is he goes in there and he takes a sample from his hand, he puts it under the microscope, puts it on a slide, he puts the water with this organism in it, and he watches. And he watches this organism literally swarm around his blood cells like a vampire and suck all his blood cells of the internal contents. And they went from one blood cell to the next blood cell to the next until all were consumed.
Until all were consumed. Oh, my God. This is the...
And now, back to the best of Art Bell.
You know, again, this is so alarming to people that I want to be very sure that everybody understands that we're not just feeding them some sort of science fiction.
No.
What we're telling them about what's going on in North Carolina and apparently elsewhere is well documented. Now, how do... I guess people are going to want to read your book. So how do they get your book?
Well, the book is available around the country. There was a big ad in the New York Times book review this weekend. It's widely distributed. But let me say, Art, you know, one of the things that we have to be careful about is just overwhelming people with bad news. And I think that really what I tried to do in this book, too, is to present it in a somewhat inspiring context, and that is the struggle... And I can't say victory yet. That would be maybe the epilogue for the paperback of this female scientist to get authorities to be responsible to it. And what she goes through and the sort of the struggle still is inspiring in a way that I hope can galvanize people and rather than sort of depress them.
Well, I'm sitting here feeling sorry for the people of North Carolina because I realize the impact it's going to have on
them.
They
deserve better. And that's what I said there. And that's why I went there expecting a lot of hostility and antagonism. And I was continually, wherever I went, I was thanked by people that made me feel like I was speaking for a lot of the citizens in that state who are being unnecessarily victimized.
Let me tell you why that is, Rodney. It's because everybody knows it's true.
Yeah.
Everybody knows this is going on. They damn well know about it. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't push the button. There we go. First-time caller line, now you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Where are you calling from, please?
I'm calling from the Midwest.
All right.
Okay. Just as an aside to your remark about the early sexual maturation of young women.
Yes.
There was a report done, oh goodness, I'd say about 94, 95, I've got a copy of it around somewhere here, that was done in England right around in the Thames Estuary, and they noticed a significant increase in the amount of deformed fish, primarily with dual sets of sexual organs. And the causal link between that type of deformity and the environmental impact of birth control pills that it entered into.
Linked to estrogen in some way, in other words.
Pardon me?
Linked in some way to estrogen as the story.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's all over, basically. My question for Rodney is, what in particular, as far as the areas where these organisms are located, is this industrialized areas, agricultural areas? What type of runoff is this attributed to?
Yeah.
Well, what they're finding is that it's a system that has been really inundated with variety of runoffs, agriculture, industrial, sewage treatment plants, and even what they call non-point sources. That would be acid deposition, runoffs from sewers, golf courses. But really what has tipped the balance is the swine industry. And it was courted by North Carolina that saw the writing on the wall with tobacco. And the way they treat hog influenza is very primitive. They use hog lagoons there. And so it leaches into the water table, and the nitrogen and phosphorus, the nutrients that are in that hog waste, have really thrown the ecological balance over the brink. That's what makes it so difficult, because every time you point your finger at one sort of source of the problem, you got four fingers going in other directions. So all of it is contributing to it, and that's why they're having so much trouble getting people to clean up, because it is economically costly, and no one person can be pointed to as you're the source of the blame. They're all contributing to it.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Alex, and I live about 25 minutes from North Carolina.
Yes, sir.
And I read, the USA Today every day. I read our local paper here, and I watch CNN and news, so I'm not media illiterate, but I haven't heard anything about this.
All right.
And I guess my question is, well, I guess first of all, I've heard the ABC report, too, about the girls
right.
maturing at 8. And
right, that may or may not have any relationship.
Well, that's what I was saying. I didn't hear them say North Carolina in particular. They didn't mention that in the ABC news report that I heard, but anyway, my question with the hepatitis outbreak, that everybody's hearing about with the strawberries mm-hmm. and that kind of deal, that came from Mexico, right?
Right.
Which supposedly we're supposed to have stringent laws about things that come into the United States.
Somebody violated a law, by the way. It is against the law to import for distribution for that purpose, so there's going to be a lot of... There's going to be a whole lot of trouble for somebody over this, believe me.
Well, how I wanted to relate that was, with this being from our own area, I mean, with, the North Carolina fishing industry and that, do you not think that, it would be very easy for us to ship around fish that is infected by this to...
I see. That's a very good question. Rodney, what about the fish that are caught in North Carolina and sent all over the place for one reason or another?
Well, I met on Saturday night. I went down to Morehead City to meet with the North Carolina Fisheries Association, who were upset at the negative publicity that was coming out and the idea that it might impact their industry. And I'll have to say, I said to them, fellows, you should never have been put in a situation. When this organism was first identified and linked to fish kills in 1993, you should have demanded right there and then from your state tests to determine what toxin it releases, and is that toxin in the fish flesh? Is it in the seafood there that you're exporting to other states? If not, you're putting yourself in a legally precarious position. They have basically not had those studies done, so they do not have the scientific data to reassure people. Now, let me say, cooking fish, for the most part, neutralizes toxins, but not always, and the possibility that on microscopic levels, these toxins are harboring those fish flesh and are going out, if those studies come out later on and confirm that presence, and there are going to be major lawsuits, and so they should have moved on this a long time ago, and that's not my fault, and that's probably not their fault either. That's the state bureaucracies that should be making those tests.
All right. Part of the book that I just wrote has to do with the weather changes.
Mm-hmm.
Let me read you what I just got. Art, as I sit here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota, with the worst flooding in recent memory, a month and a half early, with a blizzard raging on at 30 degrees below zero wind chill in April, winds up to 60 miles per hour, with floodwaters freezing cars, houses, and everything else that moves flat in its tracks, I can only come to the conclusion that it is the beginning of the geographic changes that so many guests have predicted. Now, will man be able to adapt and cope with these changes, or is it also the beginning of the life changes that are to come to bear. Is this the weather change that Ed Dames remotely viewed? What next, a volcano in Kansas or an earthquake in South Dakota? So we have been, we've had a year of this or more now, Rodney. Mm-hmm. The weather is clearly changing.
Yeah, you have some very eloquent listeners, Art. And the as the weather changes and the climate impacts the environment, we can expect more strange phenomena. We can also expect new species to mutate that had not been previously toxic or harm for people. And we're only going to know about it when they start manifesting bizarre symptoms. And I see this organism is an example of that.
All right, and we should be clear that this new or old organism, this horrible thing that will kill fish and can it kill human beings?
Well, I mean, it does not kill them. The lethality is not directly related, where you can say, well, you're exposed to this, you take it into your system, you are going to die, other than the compromised immune system. We don't know what all it does, and that's why we shouldn't be in this position of ignorance, because this was brought to the attention of the health authorities, 3 years ago, and we still don't know answers, and they are still doing studies. All I know is this is everything we learn about it is disturbing. It gets worse.
All right,
if
they have a very bad year in North Carolina, meaning it gets very hot, very hot, probably with hurricanes roaring in, how is that going to affect this?
Well, I mean, they've been talking about that. Is if we don't act as a result of the publicity generated by this book, and then we have on top of that another bad summer, we are in real trouble here. So we need to begin to start doing things. And that's why when I was there, I really tried to give the book somewhat of a positive spin. And to the North Carolinians, really, this is a challenge and an opportunity. You can set an example for other states by how you handle this situation, because there will be a paperback, and that paperback will have an updated chapter of what North Carolina has done since this book has come out. But if you have another bad summer and you don't begin to act on this book, then that could really spell major economic problems.
Well, with
the
story I've got from Wilmington, Delaware, and the story from South Africa, and people I think have seen that on CNN, red tide there, with just thousands of things crawling out of the sea. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Thousands of tons, excuse me. This may already have spread. I mean, it may be too late in that regard.
Well, I like to think the only way to stop this, I propose they do extensive monitoring and detection systems in all the hot spots of North Carolina this summer, and then issue alerts like you have in L.A., pollution alerts. Have them publicly posted in the newspaper what the levels of this organism are, where, when are the days you don't go fishing or don't go swimming. That doesn't solve the problem, but immediately addresses the concern of people. In the long run, the only way they're going to solve it is really not solving it, but manage it, and that is by cutting back on the nutrients and the pollutants that are going into the rivers.
What do you think the chances are we'll actually do that?
Oh, gosh, Art. I think that if North Carolinians can say it's going to cost us more if we don't do it than if we do, there's hope.
Are they not yet to that point, though?
I don't think you have the political support up in the legislature, and I know the governor is in a difficult situation because of the incredible pressures of the hog industry there.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Rodney Barker. Hi.
Hey, I'm in North Carolina.
Yes, sir. Where in North Carolina?
Charlotte.
And
I've suffered with the neurotoxin degrees bacterially for over 20 years. And it is a terrible thing to go through. I now do support group work. I found some answers that helped me after 20 years. I became housebound, city-bound, and then housebound. Couldn't get out of bed. I'm now living 98% normal life again. And Rodney Barker's book, I've been, of course, keenly aware of this because of my illness. I've been looking into all this.
All right, but let me ask you, have you seen a lot of publicity about it there in North Carolina?
Well, it's been like his book, when it came out, there's been a two-minute snitch on the local news, TV, and things like that. But the articles have been in the paper about he's right about the hog farming, and one of our big senators has a huge hog interest, and his lagoons broke and polluted, and they fined him, you know, a slap on the wrist. But basically, the news, you know, has been kind of spotty. But if you really have been aware of it, I mean, I've been aware of it for quite a few years, and they are getting sores, and the brain symptoms are the first three I go to, the short-term memory loss being the second most prominent symptom. And, you know, you go to sleep, and you wake up the next morning and see the leaves on the trees, and you wonder if you're going crazy because you thought you went to sleep in the winter.
All right, sir, I appreciate the call.
I was in Charlotte at the beginning of last week, and in Charlotte is more inland, it's not on the coast, he's right in terms of the regional coverage. I did a couple of TV spots and a couple of radio shows there. I don't know what it takes to sort of blanket the media. I've done a number of national shows. I was on Dateline 2 weeks ago, as well as Good Morning America and CNN, and then there was the New York Times, and I know in Raleigh this has been a big story.
All right, if I play the bureaucrat who thinks Rodney Barker is full of it,
mm-hmm.
and that this is just some sort of overblown mm-hmm. non-story that Rodney Barker is blowing up to sell books, how do you answer it?
Well, I mean, I say go to the newspapers, go to the down on the coast, talk to the doctors who are seeing the patients, take a trip down through all those coastal towns and cities that I do, see how seriously they take it, talk to the people who've been given money to do research, see how seriously they take it. The only people who are going to be talking like that are going to be the bureaucrats who I challenge and reveal and expose in the book. And for the most part, I am getting endorsement from both the scientific circles, from the medical circles, and certainly from the population.
Rodney, if we do nothing at all, what'll happen?
I think you're going to have we're going to have more and more of. One of the long-standing things is we're talking about health care in this country, and I think you're going to have chronic problems. You're going to have acute problems. I think that it's going to have a major, major impact on North Carolina. I think it's going to, its economy, its population is going to be affected. I hate to think about that, Art. I mean, it's only going to get worse and dramatically worse because, I mean, the critical point has been reached in North Carolina. I think it's the first in line from the way a lot of coastal states are going to be affected by these kinds of problems. And
North Carolina now, the East Coast as a whole, perhaps later. All right,
yeah.
Rodney, can you hold on?
I can.
All right. Coming to the top of the hour, Rodney Barker is my guest, and The Waters Turned Blood is his book. I'm Art Bell, and you're listening to the CBC Radio Network.